Great. Oh, that's better. Great. Well, thank you so much. It's been very inspiring in the break just how many of you are sharing about the innovative things happening in this community. I think one of, without having been a member of Santa Barbara, it does seem like a real engine of innovation and a place where you can apply a lot of very forward-looking principles in a way that is transpartisan, that's bringing people together, that is about evolving a new template. One thing that Bob had mentioned there that I have a chapter on is this idea of solutions councils, which was born a little bit from a dialogue with Barb Marx Hubbard, and then I kind of took it in a slightly different direction, but she's had this idea for a peace room in the White House that would be sort of tracking and connecting all the innovations that are working. And I said, the only challenge with that is that peace has tended to become more of a left-leaning term. The problem is that with this polarized political process, a lot of times our vocabulary is turned into like, okay, well, that's left or this is right, so peace is left and security is right. And so I said, I think that it's a better concept to do that from the White House level to the local level, but call them solutions councils. And so solutions is one of the terms that hasn't really polarized left and right. Everybody's looking for solutions. Everybody's looking for what innovations are working. So the concept would be that to have a local solutions council would be sort of a citizens-based initiative where you have representatives for different sectors of the society, each of which are looking for innovations that are really working, not just in the local community, but in other places around the world. And in the country and around the world. And so your goal is to find these next level solutions and then be able to bring them to and implement them locally. You could do that locally. I talked with Gavin Newsom about doing that on the state level in California. He really likes the idea. It hasn't gotten full traction yet, but I'm hopeful that hopefully he'll become governor, that was something that we could implement on the state level so that you have a way of, it's like in a company where you often have what they call the skunk works, which is like the inventing the future over here, a little bit separate from dealing with the now and producing the products that that you need to do to keep the business alive. So in a similar way, politics, there's a lot of pressure on average mayor or city council person all the time. They've got things coming at them right now that need to be handled. So to have a function where you're bringing in more of the innovative next level of things from a different way from a solutions council. And so things like the Bank of North Dakota, it's like, oh, why don't we do a Bank of Santa Barbara? And then you'll study that. So you're studying what's happening elsewhere. And that allows more innovation to come into government, more citizen participation, because we all become those scouts for what's working elsewhere. And that there's more communication with the innovators and other communities as well. So I think we could have solutions councils from the local level to the state level to the national level. I did get a copy of this I haven't gotten it to Trump yet, but I got a copy to Hillary Clinton, and also Barack Obama has got a copy, and trying to seeds, so it's part of the thing is just planting seeds where we can. A lot of different people have given it to, I've signed copies to mayors, to city council members, to police chiefs. Somebody wanted to give one to Justin Trudeau, some British political leaders. So it's been interesting to see, because this book is not just like my ideas, it's more, there's my stuff, plus I'm integrating a lot of what I've been exposed to in terms of really stuff that's working and inspiring people. So it kind of just planting these little seeds, and then we'll see what blossoms where. But I think that this concept of solutions councils, it's interesting because it builds upon what Barbara had done, and she's obviously one of the more well-known consciousness people who've come out of Santa Barbara. At least she was here for a long time. And so I think that's it's an interesting possibility, something you could consider templating here locally. So that's one of the things, maybe just as a kind of an umbrella, is I'd be very interested, because this is probably the largest group of people who have not just attended an event, but like who all have the book and are reading the book and are going to be working with it, but who are going to be working with it over 12 weeks. So I would be very interested in staying in contact and saying, what are the things that you can template here, what could you move forward, and then we could start to showcase that in different ways too. It's like, oh, Santa Barbara is sort of like a pilot community for how do we implement more of these things locally, and each of you might have a different piece of the puzzle, but it doesn't have to be just things in the book, but it's like using the book as sort of a catalyst to say, let's make Santa Barbara an example, because you know the most compelling thing is always when we can see something working, then it's very easy to replicate it elsewhere, because and to chronicle that with media and you know the story of it, because that's when change really happens. So I think we need to create more of these innovative ideas, move them forward, demonstrate them locally, and then create media around them that allows them to propagate elsewhere. So, and maybe a final note around that is just, you know, that's sort of my fondest hope for the book, is that it's basically seeding innovation all over the place. And it ultimately goes beyond America. I've talked with people about doing Sacred Canada, Sacred World, or Sacred Slovakia, Sacred World. So it's really about recognizing every country has its own destiny path, its own higher mission, its own contribution to the larger global village that we're all a part of. And so we're all moving to create a sacred world, and each country has its unique gift into that. So this is, I don't feel like I could write a book on Sacred Canada, Sacred World, because I'm not Canadian, but I think that's what I would love to see, is that it's like Chicken Soup for the Soul, who Jack Canfield lives here as well. It's like, oh, this could be like a Chicken Soup for the Soul, only it's like for the soul of a country. and that different countries can do their own thing with it. So,
ready for questions?
Ready for questions.
Okay, I've opened your book up to chapter 17 called Consecrating the Warrior, and you make a point that, like the Romans, who encouraged and cultivated martial culture through Colosseum sport and battlefield glory, Americans have been trained to love violence in film, games, and sport, which has fed into our growth as Earth's dominant military power. What's the negative side? What can we do about our lust for violence?
Yeah. Well, I think part of what I was trying to do with that chapter is, first of all, to embrace the principle of warriorship. But again, it's like, when we just reject things, it tends to leave them wherever they are, rather than embrace it and call it to a higher expression. So in the Middle Ages, knights would consecrate their knighthood to ladies. They would sort of pledge themselves to the lady. And the principle of that is like, yes, I'm a warrior, but I'm consecrating it to a higher principle, to love, to beauty, to the good for society. And I think that where the warrior energy can become destructive is when it's not consecrated to a sufficiently high principle or purpose. And so when it's about bringing more freedom and healing and evolving a better society, it's like that warrior discipline and energy and power and focus and might is helpful, and we can really put that in service. And so the parts where, when your people serve in the military, where there's the most disillusionment is when we basically put warriors to go to battle for what's essentially not a just cause at the end of the day. And so that's where it sort of gets corrupted. So the principle, I think, is to embrace the importance of the warrior and the virtues and the skills that are developed in that process and consecrate it to a higher level. So I talk about in the book, for instance, shifting our focus from we once had a Department of War, now we have a Department of Defense. What if we rebrand that and call that the Department of Peace? And so that everybody is on a deep level, that's mostly people who are drawn to the military, are wanting to protect and serve and to create security for the greater good and to defend freedom. And so if we just simply raise the aspiration and the mission to, like, we're not just trying to defend against other countries or defeat terrorism, we're actually trying to create a world at peace. And that's what every warrior, if we're consecrating the warrior energy, is like, I am giving my warrior service to the cause of creating a world at peace. And it actually means that you create more collaborations with people who aren't necessarily in the military. You say, wow, if we're going to create a world of peace, I need the psychologists. I need the people who are going to train people on conflict transformation. We need the people who are going to go in and do some healing work in areas that have been destroyed by wars. Like, we need to have these different factions working together. Because we are, at least until we create a world at peace, we are going to need military and police officers and the warriors to help protect against the worst in humanity, too. You know, we still have a lot of that. So it's not like that's going to go away, but if they're more of a partnership model where we're saying, you know what, we honor that, we respect that, and we want to partner it with all of these other sort of kind of soft, more healing, integrative kind of functions, then it sort of actually creates a little bit different focus and we lift the aspiration. And I think that we should do that at a national level. That's part of why I wanted to get the book into people like political leaders. Like if our aspiration is winning a war on terror, that doesn't create actually the ultimate goal in mind. And it can tend to keep you cycling in a certain level of consciousness versus like our goal is to create a world at peace. Dealing with terrorism is part of that, but it's like we're actually consecrated to a higher mission.
I'm so thrilled that we're starting this today, which is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. Because
that's fantastic.
I see several really wonderful similarities between Word and Life and Star Trek, where we are constantly trying for deeper understanding and exploration, and we're seeking out and respecting other viewpoints and perspectives of other cultures. I think back to a couple of years ago we did Karen Armstrong's book on compassion, and our first the first five presenters presented the Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Jewish and Islamic perspectives on compassion, and I think that's what defines us. And there's one other thing that many people might not know, that they snuck in a very wonderful spiritual thing on this. Leonard Nimoy, who was a very devout Jew, created the live long and prosper, the hand gesture, and that is he meant that to represent the Hebrew letter Shem, which is the first letter of Shaddai, which is the name of God.
Oh wow, that's interesting little piece, kind of snuck in there into Star Trek, that invoking the first name, the first letter of God. That's beautiful. Well, you didn't know you were members of a covert SS Enterprise here in Enterprise in Santa Barbara.
It's like a vision of operating system 12.0 or something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, it is interesting how media can do so much to shape our vision of what is possible, too. And I think that it is important that we honor that. It's like, that's something that we're exploring more with... anyway, some people in Hollywood who are interested in expanding our conception of what's possible. So Star Trek has done a great service, so that's great.
Hi. Also, it's World Day of Prayer today. So
perfect.
Just a shout out for prayer, too, as well.
Go
as Star
prayer.
Trek, from a Star Trek fan, too. I have a young 19-year-old daughter who is watching this political scene, and all of her friends, and she has, like, it's sad to see the disdain and the disrespect, and I mean, I think that what's happening is affecting our youth.
Yeah.
That we have patriotism. I was raised with it. But what do you have any ideas, or do you discuss in the book, how do we help the youth? Because this is just tearing apart, I think, a lot of sense of patriotism, respect for the country, feeling that leaders, and you know, young people think old people are kind of out of it anyway, and so this is really not helping our team for us that are the elders, or soon to be. So any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I think we can all speak about this kind of deeper kind of patriotism where we say it's sort of like, you know, when you're raising a child, they often will go through a phase of a lot of sometimes dysfunctional behavior and rebelling and self-destruction. And you know, you could say it's like America is a bit like an adolescent, late adolescent it's a little, you know, it's doing some things that are kind of not reflective of who we're becoming. And to say it's like, know, it's really important that we hold a vision of higher possibility and we stay engaged, and that it's part of our responsibility, being born and blessed with a lot of the benefits of our society, to help it to grow to the next level. And you can, I always find it's good to agree, first of all. You could say, you know, I also find it's really heartbreaking, the level of discourse, the level of attack, level of diminishment, and I know that we are made of something finer stuff, that we are, that there are noble principles in our, in who we are and what we've been given, and that there's a potential for us to grow beyond this. So, and really to encourage them and say, and traditionally it's always been the next generation that carries that torch of possibility to grow still further. And so to really say, it's like, it's, you know, we're counting on you to, like, to not just react to the current situation, but hold the torch of possibility for what we grow into. So in a way, calling her and others into that sense of sacred responsibility to be part of the next wave of change. And you know, I think we, whatever generation we are, we can do our part. You know, it's like I'm kind of more in the middle phase, and got a lot of responsibilities, but I'm trying to, you know, do my part to write this book and go, you know, advocate with our congress people, and there's a group called FCNL. We go to DC each year and do some peace lobbying, which is great, and also connect with in our district. So to try to make it positive and forward looking and fun, and also just to sort of see that we're going through a phase. In a way, it's like that we're, as a country, I think what we're doing is we're outworking a lot of the pus of the psyche of our political process. You know, and it's kind of, I've used that metaphor, sort of like somebody's ugly at times, but sometimes that's part of the cleansing process and healing process, and sometimes we need to be exposed to the ugliness to really choose to let it go permanently. And so people have used that metaphor, like that it's sort of like, you know, opening a wound right now, and so there's a lot of the ugliness coming forward, but at least it's not suppressed, it's not in the shadows. We can choose what we do with it, and we can choose to go to another level. And I think it can be, sometimes ugly things can be a catalyst for birthing something more beautiful too. Like I was coming out of the Republican National Convention, I had this idea and wrote an article about an Honest Abe pledge. You know, because Abraham Lincoln, probably the most beloved Republican leader, known for his honesty, and that, like, what if we had an Honest Abe pledge that was not just about Republicans, but really about a commitment, like Grover Norquist did with the No Taxes pledge, a commitment to a higher level of honesty, and that we're holding each other accountable to that as political leaders on both sides of the aisle. And so I haven't fully activated that yet. I've had a lot of ideas and different things moving forward. But I think that the more we can just point next generation to, listen, it's, you know, you will pay the price if the political process is as bad as it is. And there's this opportunity for us to make this a generation in which we really go to another level.
I think that's what I appreciate about you, is you're giving us all these opportunities to stand alongside somebody who we may not necessarily agree with. But it allows us to have that conversation. And in your chapter on, I think it was the political chapter, where you said we need a new communication tool, because standing next to your daughter when your daughter is so upset, or your son, or even your grandmother's really upset about the way the politics are going today, how do you hear them? How do you make sure that you're hearing their point of view rather than being upset about them?
Yeah. Well, I just find that it's like verbal Aikido. You know, it's like Aikido, the principle is where you kind of blend with an attacker. It's like the first, when you can validate something, even if you have a different point of view, then it's going to create some resonance, because it's like you receive first. And then, so I'll give an example. I was on a conservative radio show in Colorado, and it was a good call. It was a full hour, and but he didn't agree with me on quite a number of different things, but we engaged in a good way. It was constructive, and like I was talking about the rebalancing of the American political culture, and how we really need to bring the feminine into balance with the masculine in our culture, and that's part of why the Statue of Liberty is on the cover, and we need more women in office, but also more of feminine values within the political culture, and that reduces some of the intensity of combat and builds more bridges. Anyway, which to me sounded like a very reasonable thing to say, but he was like, no, I think this culture has become way too feminine. It's like men are always getting critiqued and all the dismissed and butt of jokes and all this stuff. And And so he kind of was fairly strong. And I said, so I first said to myself, well, how can I really blend and honor with what he's saying? And I said, you know, I want to honor that the cult, gender wars and diminishment of men doesn't serve anybody. And it doesn't bring out the best in men. It doesn't bring out the nobility in men's souls. Like, we need to bring out the best in men, and to denigrate the men and masculine doesn't really help. And so I want to stand with you on that. And I think we need to really do that with women as well. And that when we do that together, like, the healthy masculine, healthy family, healthy feminine create healthy families together too. And so that's, as a culture, we need to have a healthy family. And that comes from both sides being honored in a deeper way. And so he could totally get on board with that. But I first had to kind of honor the piece of truth in what he was sharing. We can't, sometimes it's hard to do, and I'm not saying I'm perfect at it. But if our first principle is, instead of argue back, to say, what can we see and honor in what they're saying, and perhaps, or even just be curious. If there's not something you can genuinely agree with, just be curious. Like, where did that view come from? Or, you know, people, you know, you can just be more curious about, like, where they're coming from. And then when people, like, policy positions often have a whole history behind them. And so if you, like, for instance, if you're big on reducing gun violence and somebody's very pro-Second Amendment, thinks we need to have more guns in the society and guns in classrooms, and you're just like, I don't understand that at all. Like, ask a question, like, you know, who taught you how to relate to guns, and what was your first experiences growing up? You know, because then you kind of take it below the policy level and a little more into the personal. And then you might actually understand something differently. It's like, oh, maybe, you know, they maybe grew up in a hunting family and they had a lot, there was a deep bond with their grandfather who really taught them gun safety. And so there's like a whole personal history that might be very different than yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. I'm very pleased that you brought up this idea of people working in groups and between groups. And I think that's the future of the no war and peace. I personally belong to a women's international group, WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
Beautiful.
And it's worldwide, and we go into different countries and help. And
good for you.
Try to educate. So we want to build take walls away and actually communicate. WILF means Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and they have headquarters in Geneva, and they follow all the politics and so on. So I'm happy you brought up the subject, and I hope people will get together and work together.
Amen.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Well, I think that all of these issues can't be, ultimately the evolution of our country and our world can't be separated from the whole question of women's empowerment and the bringing in the feminine into balance with the masculine. I think that's how we create a world that really works, is this kind of deep, sacred reciprocity and balance. Because it's like, you know, I think either the masculine or the feminine, when out of balance with the other, tends to create more havoc rather than good. And so I think that it's like, when we can be in a state of deep respect and honoring of the differential there, that's really key. So I'm a big believer in women's empowerment, more women in politics. I've supported several women running for Congress. I want to see more women in political office. And I think developing, my wife does a lot of women's leadership trainings and programs. I think that that's really key for us to really create a whole and sacred world.
Thank you so much. Another person who was influential in Santa Barbara, now deceased, is James Hillman, who, in whose honor Pacifica Graduate Institute was developed. Hillman is the founder of the Archetypal School of Jungian Psychology.
Uh-huh.
And in a sort of essence, his work is that if you want to do therapy, you must do therapy on the image.
Hmm.
So if you work with a couple, you want to, you know, sort of look at the, you know, what a good couple, a good marriage is like. And what I want to thank you for is that I see that the entirety of your work is doing therapy on the image of how we can live together on the planet.
Nice. Well, thank you for that reflection. I did have, Jean Shinoda Bolen wrote a nice endorsement when she read the book that was all about that I was applying the, I think it's the conjunctio of the unification of opposites to the collective process. And I have done some study with psychology, and I read a little bit of Hillman way back around the diamond and some Jungian psychology, but I'm not steeped in it the way that it sounds like you are and others. But I think it informs a little bit of the background, is it like that when the intrapsychic work of like really uniting with the things that we're polarized against in ourselves and shifting our internal images, and that the same principles apply in our collective. Yes.
I would like to know what's the shortest path to becoming as optimistic as you are? just
here.
Revisiting the first question.
The truth is, you, in your heart, are as optimistic as me, but it's like your mind has been exposed to a lot of things that are very hard to take in. And so it's like that, you have that same level of optimism deep in your heart. It's probably just a little shielded.
Okay.
because with good reason. I want to honor because, you know, we do witness a lot of trauma and a lot of terrible things in our culture, and so it can be, you know, we want, like, there's a natural impulse to kind of wall off, but, like, behind anybody who's a cynic, there's always a heart that cares very deeply, you know, I find.
The first question was about war, and I like the idea of a Department of Peace. I am not convinced that a lot of people actually enlist for the purpose of security and peace, but for some people, for many people, it's their only legal path to a career.
Good point.
And I think it's noble that a knight would raise aspirations towards the honor of women. But a lot of those, the reason for the existence of the knights was for the ethnic purging of Muslims.
Good point, yes.
So there's a cynicism about our capacity with our given foundations to actually overhaul enough to be realistic about being helpful. So,
yeah. Well, I think part of the reason I like to think in long-term cycles is that sometimes short-term realistic means it's like you make a little bit of progress each year. You can make a little bit of progress on these different fronts. But to really fully realize a vision of our full potential and to shift things, it takes a longer time horizon. But, you know, if we look historically, we don't have to just look in the future. It's like something like the institution of slavery. There was a time, I've read a lot about the sort of early abolitionists, and it was tough in like the 1820s and 30s. It's like people believed there was no way we were ever going to outlaw slavery. It was too entrenched. It was too, the powers were too, had too much money. The political leaders were behind it. I mean, the early abolitionists just seemed like complete, foolish idealist optimists. They're like, you guys are crazy. And so it's interesting to read about, like, you know, starting newspapers, propagating ideas, you know, going around on tours, speaking tours, getting run out of town. And, you know, it's like, but, you know, it did happen. It just took some tenacity and a commitment to the long haul. And there's still legacies, obviously, of slavery psychology that we have not outgrown. I think it's important to remember how much we have overcome. There was a time in which it was unthinkable for women to vote, and that's just to take. You know, now we could be electing the first woman president. I mean, and then to have these are big cultural shifts. So that's why I like, you know, Martin Luther King's the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. So if we ground ourselves in the long arc of evolution, and to see that, and to trust that, yes, we're going to go through periods of regression. Yes, we're going to do some dumb stuff. We're going to be dysfunctional. There's going to be pain. And in the long haul, there is a sense of that we're evolving consciousness. We're evolving society. We are maturing as a race. And to ground in that wider perspective allows us, I think, to navigate more of what's emerging, which can be really hard on our hearts and minds to witness. And so I think that optimism, I think to keep a long-term view And I like to just put as much attention as I can on the people that are doing really innovative things, because I think if you just read the mainstream news, it's easier to get more and more contracted and more fearful. But that's why part of why I created the Shift Network is that I get to interface with amazing people all the time who are doing like really cool, innovative stuff. And so I know 100% that we have all the solutions we need. We don't even need to invent much more. It's just propagating what we've already got, you know, from systems of healing and growth to education programs. It's like the solutions are all available. We just need to go through enough of a shift in consciousness and culture that we can open to these possibilities. And I just know that really beautiful things are on the horizon. It may take a little bit longer. I've had a lot of guidance around 2020 being a big marker point, and I thought it was interesting that they were saying there's a whole initiative here to have 2020 as a year of peace. The whole chapter on 2020 is like 2020 vision is like, let's reset the vision for our planet. What's possibility? And so I've been talking with people who are big concert promoters. They're doing a concert in Ethiopia this year that's more about unifying indigenous peoples, or actually in February. Then there's going to be one in Jerusalem, and then there's going to be a bunch in India, and then we're looking at like how do we do a planetary unification with music and concerts and resetting the vision of humanity for 2020. So my sense is that we're really on the cusp of some bigger shifts on the planet, and to trust in the long arc of history, and to focus enough on the people who are doing really innovative work, and that there is real breakthroughs happening on every level. And then I also just take heart for like what are the movements that have succeeded. Like I spent a lot of time at the DNC with the leadership of the LGBT community, and I went to the various. They were the ones who got me into the actual stadium, and I went to the caucus meetings, and it was very heartening to be in those caucus meetings. And they said, 1972, there was one out gay delegate to the Democratic Convention, one out of the entire place that was out. And this year there were 700, and there was 28 trans delegates. I mean, I was like, really? There's 28 trans delegates? It's like that's amazing cultural shift. And to go from like, you know, Rich Toffel was one of the he was one of the early advocates for gay marriage, and in the 90s that was unthinkable. Most gay people were like, that's crazy, who are you kidding? And like now that's the law of the land. So to take heart from the movements that do succeed, and to really say, you know, we are making progress slowly but surely. Sometimes we'll regress, and it's always a bummer when we do, but that the long arc is something majestic, and I think that's what I want to hold the potential, is that we are going to create something sooner or later that is worthy of us on this planet, that is just a really beautiful, beautiful world, that where people really have the opportunity to thrive, and that it's peaceful and sustainable, and that people have the opportunity. And I don't think it's as far away as we might think.
Again, thank you. I resonated with your comments about the groups working together for prison reform.
Uh-huh.
So on the local level, we have an opportunity. Actually, it's on the national level. There's a national initiative called Stepping Up, which has as its goal to reduce the number of people with mental illness in jail. And it has very specific steps. When you sign on to it as a county, you're signing on to a real commitment for results and outcomes. So you might want to follow that.
Great.
But in Santa Barbara, we have been working on this for years. And in November, there should be a presentation by the sheriff, the district attorney, and the director of mental health, which are advocating a proposal to our county to sign on to this. And so it's something to kind of watch, because as you said, it takes so long for these things to reach the level of actually having models where it's successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like hundreds of counties that have now signed on. And if we could get those, I was thinking it would be great to have 60 Minutes, you know, do a special on who's succeeding as counties in creating this this model.
Anyway. That's also, just to bring it back to Santa Barbara, I think you have a unique opportunity here because there's so many people who have played leadership roles in Hollywood who also have either retired here or have places here. There's so many of these interconnections that if you connect widely enough here, I'm sure there's ways to get different things into major media operations and really amplify that too. And so I think it is the great multiplier when you, or even just simply chronicling the success is like if you raise the money to put together a $2,000 little document, like this is an example. My wife has been doing work in San Quentin for a couple of years, and they've got this great program. Started off as a Shakespeare program for Shakespeare in prison, but then they started doing parallel plays where they would the prisoners would write their own stories and using Shakespearean themes. And it's really so powerful. I've been in there a few times to watch the shows and also to be in the groups. And it's like, it's amazing the transformations people go through. And the woman who runs that has been chronicling that, starting to get more funding for it. And it's really just fascinating to watch these people, a good percentage of them are murderers or people who have done, and they are like really blossomed as souls. They're like really great, vulnerable, beautiful human beings. And it's like part of it is like they're really working with metabolizing their history and growing into something new. And so when we can see that, I've thought when we eventually have more of a media operation, which is part of the goal with the Shift Network, I want to create channels. And I was thinking to have a channel coming out of San Quentin would be really great.
Yeah.
Because then it's like the transformation, because it also humanizes people. It's like when we can get in this category of like, oh, those are criminals, we need to lock them away. But if you really, you know, really get to know some of these guys, they're quite remarkable. And they, you know, sometimes they, it's like, just as an example, they might have been, you know, in a family where the mother was getting beaten all the time by this sort of boyfriend from the outside, and finally at 18 they snap and end up killing the guy. Meanwhile, they spend 30 years in jail, but it's like you can kind of understand more the stressors of watching your mom get beat up every night and finally hitting a breaking point. And then when you really see the kind of growth that they've gone through, it's super inspiring. And so if we're chronicling more of like the innovation that's happening and broadcasting to the world, it inspires other people to do the same. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention another resource that is available for everybody. Another resource that's available for free for everybody, and that's you can sign up for the Optimist Daily.
Nice,
and maybe it sounds like a lot of you maybe already are. And that
there's
is
another one called the Daily Good that's quite good as well, the Daily Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of solutions-oriented articles from all these different publications, and you can go to those source publications and find out more.
Yeah.
And that's sponsored by the World Business Academy here in Santa Barbara.
Oh, great. Rinaldo is great. Yeah. Terrific. I love Rinaldo. I mean, I guess he's going to also speak in this series. I think that those things are so important, and it can be something just like your little form of Facebook activism is like just sharing stories of the good, of innovation, solutions, because, you know, we all are our own little broadcast channels now. It's like we have broadcasting to our community regardless of how many people we have. And so if you're saying, hey, here's something that's amazing, that's working, and here's an action you can take, it's like it's those little acts of empowerment and shifting our consciousness kind of are an antidote to sometimes the sea of negativity that we witness on the collective scale. All right. Come on down.
I just want to thank you for coming, and I also wanted to tell people look at the endorsements here, especially the one that your mom wrote. That
<She's>
you've got a wonderful mom.
Yeah, she was so sweet. She sent that. Well, she read the book, and then she sent me that as an email, and I'm like, I'm putting that in the book, Mom. And she's like, no. It was very sweet. I'll read it if you didn't see it yet, because. And you wouldn't believe how many people have commented on that. Mm-hmm. They'll send me a note saying, I love that endorsement from your mom. Where was it? It's right up here. I am sitting here crying and cannot begin to express how touched I was by everything you wrote and how proud I am of the person you have become and your vision for our country and world. It is the best book I have ever read. I mean, it did make me cry when she sent it. I was like, that's definitely got to go in the book. And because it's you get so used to it. It's like everybody, the big hoo-has and best-selling authors, and then mom.
Beautiful. One of the things that came up for me was how I like to hang out with like-minded people, and I think most of us are like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, natural.
So I was curious about how you began that dialogue. I mean, in my mind, I know dialogue's got to be the answer, that we have to be able to come to the table and hear one another. But how did you... You got any hints for how to
I'm sure there are plenty of people in the community that you can reach out to and connect with. And, you know, there's a great... Joan Blades was one of the founders of something called Living Room Conversations. Devlin Molyneux as well. It's basically a template for how to have living room conversations. You basically find one person. Let's say you're progressive, then you find somebody who's more conservative, and you say, and then you each invite two friends, and you say, we're going to have a dialogue that helps to transform the political discourse. And there's a structure for how you do that. You don't start on policies. Like, you don't say, like, what do you think about gun control? It's more like, it's like you get to know people on a deeper level, and then how does that inform and feed their political perspective, and sometimes very rich discussions. So I think that's a good model. And most people, you know, in your extended family, you're going to have somebody who doesn't always agree with you.
Oh, gosh, we have that.
Yeah. You know, you're going to have somebody who doesn't agree with you. And then that's, I think, a good starting point, a good place to work. And then I think it's like sometimes taking a risk in how you share publicly, like on a Facebook post or if you do a blog or you have access to something like that, that sometimes if you share... a genuine exploration, like me. I invested some time in really shifting my relationship with Sarah Palin, and then that opened a door to different kinds of connections. So, you know, I think it's going to be unique. And I think the more you can, like, noticing where it is that you're just hanging out with people who are like-minded, my wife and I can get into this too, and then also, you know, taking on something that might challenge you in a different direction. We're thinking about, like, oh, there's the Canal District in San Rafael, and we don't really have much of a connection in there, but it's mainly Spanish-speaking. But my wife speaks Spanish better than I do, and we both spent time in Latin American countries, but we're like, you know, what can we do that we just build a little bit more of a bridge, maybe get involved with some organization in the Canal District, which is a very different culture in the midst of Marin County and a lot of the thing that we're doing. So it could be just a little bit of volunteer work, could be going to, you know, maybe a church. A friend of mine was really concerned about the divides with Islam, and she just started going to a local mosque, which I thought was great. She built friendships, and she's an active Methodist, but she just thought it would be good to go to mosques for a while, or local mosque, and she built some friendships and connections. And so I think it's like noticing where do we, you know, where's our comfort zone, and then how do we lean into something different? My wife grew up fairly privileged in different ways, and so for her, working in San Quentin, which is in the heart of Marin County, was actually really eye-opening, and, you know, and vice versa. You know, she had a lot of people who were just like really, you know, felt like she had people say it's like the only positive relationship with a white person they've ever had. You know, and that's like those little. It's like that was a great when she had a couple guys say that to her, and so she was like really moved by that, like, wow, it's like to really have never had a positive relationship with a white person, like how much that's going to inform your worldview and how, you know, so how important it is that we do cross those divides in different ways. So it'll be unique to you, but I think you'll find ways to explore, to get into some different, you know, arenas and make some different bridges. Maybe you could go to a local Republican club if you're a Democrat. You know, it's like I went to the Republican. Now I did feel, you know, I've been a lifelong Democrat. So you know, when I was in the arena with Trump getting the announcement speech, I felt a little bit like a spy at times. But I tried to have meaningful conversations with people you know, so it was interesting for me to cross train and also, you know, I had some really good, lovely conversations and respectful conversations, and I felt like some of my stereotypes, like also even my subtle stereotypes, even writing a book like this, like were dropping away.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Stephen, I want to thank you very much for coming down.
Good. Is that a wrap?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, all. Dude, I'll say one last thing. I love it when people buy copies of the books to give to different political leaders, and I've had all kinds of them, or local officials, or to kind of seed it in there. Like Pittsburgh, when I was in Pittsburgh, they like got them for all kinds of different people. So if you feel like giving it a gift and then using it with other people, I'm happy to sign extra copies and encourage that. And if you don't have the money to do one, I'm happy. If you don't have the money and you really want to give one to a certain person, I'm happy to just gift you one and sign it as well.
Okay, thanks for coming down. It was a great kickoff to our series. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for organizing this. Go Santa Barbara.